Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 10th of January, and I'm recording at 9:05 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is big picture long-term outlook for the various asset categories, but let's have a quick look at what's happened here today. It's been quite an interesting day here. For instance, in stock markets, I'll start with Wall Street. It was a choppy day here, and Wall Street traders will have an interest in this because I think it's the fifth market day of the year, and they'll be looking at the numbers. I think the Dow needed 20 points to the upside to have an up week. It's not got that. It's just missed it. We're firmer here today, though, in the S&P and particularly the Nasdaq. Nasdaq swung all over the place here today. But the U.S. indices are basically netted all out, and the U.S. indices are steady near their highs. Okay, elsewhere, the Canadian market up nearly 1%, or 0.9%. Mexico, a star performer here today, that's up 2.17%. So some of these commodity producers, and well, of course, it's also much more than that. Does produce a fair amount of oil and metals. But it's a good manufacturing center, not least for the USA. European stock markets all a bit firmer in here today. No big gains. Asia, mixed performance, maybe slightly more to the upside. I'll just check that again. China's A shares were down. Now, that's been a weak performance by that Shanghai Composite Index, but China's got a big market, and you look around, you look at Hong Kong, which was up in here today, and I look at Owen's done a piece in his written commentary on the China healthcare sector, steady action in there. And one he didn't mention, but that I hold and that I know a number of you people hold, is that China Healthcare, that Atlantis China Healthcare Fund, which has been growing up all year, or all last year, fortunately, and continued into this year. So that's strong. And then JMC, that's a JP Morgan China Investment Trust. I have a stake in that in my portfolio, and I noticed that it had been firming, which I was pleased to see. While that A share was coming down, it was outperforming the Hang Seng as well. And the only conclusion or the reason for that would be that somebody's been buying, and the discount to net asset value has now fallen back below the 8% discount level. I think it was double digits when I last mentioned that. So somebody's buying in there, whether it's covering shorts or investing on China's recovery. I'd back China's recovery over the medium term. I sound like a record stuck in a groove here in saying that. We haven't seen much recovery, but I think there are a lot of interesting things potentially going on in China. Okay, India a little firmer in here today. A few more markets to the upside in Asia as well. Now, looking at long-dated government bonds, interesting, we had some sharp drops in yields today. I think that U.S. 10-year came down to 2.86 or 87. I believe so. It's backed off that 3% level, and it's also broken the very orderly, consistent upward trend that it had seen over the last two or three months. So I think central banks have been successful, and Fed's been successful in holding that up. There was a employment figure in here today that people did not like. It was not nearly as strong for the U.S. as they had been hoping. I think it was also affected by the polar vortex, now over, but that certainly did not help the employment figures here overall. It's the statistic du jour, so I wouldn't read a whole lot into it. But the one thing that nobody mentions when they talk about employment figures, except I mention it all the time, and so forgive me for doing it once again, that the big competition's coming from the accelerated pace of innovation, and people would rather hire smart machines, which can work 24 hours a day if necessary, rather than add to the labor force. And that's not going to go away, that situation. What also I think came out of that U.S. employment report, I think I heard them saying today on CNBC when I had a brief look, that people, I think the actual workforce among adults was the lowest it's been since, I think it was 1977 or 1978. It's fallen down to 60, just below 63%. That's not so healthy in terms of job creation, but don't attribute it all to economic weakness. Attribute a lot of it to technological innovation. Okay. Again, precious metals. Well, the dollar is a bit softer in here, and that is a factor, but a good bounce taking place. Gold's up 18, silver's up 45 cents. Platinum and palladium are actually leading this particular rally. Now, mind you, they've been hugging a potential breakdown point, or gold and silver have, for a number of months now. But it's interesting to see today's buying interest, but they're going to have to do more to the upside to provide clear evidence of base formation in these levels. And I wouldn't bet entirely against that, because I do feel that if the or as the global, not if the global economy picks up, but as the global economy picks up, and the key most key player there will be China, that then we will see a firmer tone generally in many commodity prices, which have been drifting lower for 2 or 3 years now. I don't think that overall cyclical advance, cyclical bull market, if you will, in commodities, I don't think that it's actually over, but it's certainly had a big setback. But the same thing happened back in the 1970s, had a 50% pullback and then went on to new highs. Okay. So what else? Oil prices just up a dollar on the two main contracts, the WTI and the Brent. Okay, what about looking further ahead here? What's likely to happen? Well, Wall Street's expensive, as I've been saying, and it's somewhat overextended relative to its moving averages. And I know that we all know that we've seen a lot of international money just flow into Wall Street, and that is certainly understandable because people were fearful of the world ending, to exaggerate a little bit. And that's been the case for quite some time. So that's helped to fuel Wall Street, which of course also had plenty of fuel coming from the Fed's quantitative easing program, helping to push that market higher. And then there are the particular strengths of the United States, which I think that it will, or why I feel that it most definitely will not get some sort of Japanese-style stagflation, and or disinflation, I should say, to correct that. I don't think it'll see that extensive disinflationary environment because the economy has factors that are incredibly attractive for the longer term. And I mentioned these before, and I'll review them again very quickly in just a minute. But in the medium term, I would say in the lengthy medium term, I would expect that sort of a choppy period. I don't think it's impossible that we can finish this year on a new high, but it's a kind of a close bet here overall. I would expect the performance on Wall Street to be mostly choppy, but there'll be plenty of individual companies that will do well. And one of the reasons for that is that the United States really remains the most interesting economy in here, in my opinion. And the key factor, or two, the two key factors there really, the lesser of the two, I feel, but very, very important nevertheless, is competitive energy prices. So this is reviving the United States as a manufacturing center. And we can thank the fracking boom for all of that. So this is a huge advantage for a big developed economy like the United States. But the even bigger one is that the United States is pulling away from other countries in terms of its own technological innovation. We're seeing the technological innovation just about everywhere, but the United States is really the driver of this, and it has a culture involving both the universities and centers from Boston really to California focusing on this, but also that helps to attract a lot of very talented and capable and invented entrepreneurial types from all over the world to the to the USA. So that's an advantage that is actually increasing for the United States. You remember it was quite fashionable to say, and we all worried about this, I certainly worried about it, that the US was losing its lead in technology to Japan and South Korea and a whole host of Germany and a whole host of other countries. But no longer, and this has been the case now for a few years. I think if the changeover started really following the big crash in 2008. But at any rate, the good news here, and I think technological enhancement is always good news, whoever is achieving it, is that the USA's technology lead is increasing on a number of fronts. The other countries that I mentioned are also doing well in technology, but not as well. So that's a big factor. And I think on a long-term basis, this will be hugely bullish for U.S. corporations. They'll do much better than the economy. The economy may struggle with social issues, and the economy usually political administrations are a headwind too often. In developed economies, more often than not, and also in plenty of not so developed economies, and that's the case in the USA. But it's not a serious impediment, and these big U.S. autonomies, these big successful multinational companies, are benefiting from the opening up of the global economy and the capitalistic influence in the global economy and the rising middle classes in the global economy. These are hugely important themes which are just going to run for decades and decades, barring some sort of meteor accident or some sort of other exogenous event that could cause problems for global GDP growth. Now, what about Europe? I've been talking for a while now about Europe being one of the better performing regions for stock markets as it recovers from what people were convinced were its death throes in terms of the single currency and the European Union. Well, there's still plenty of economic problems, as we know, but the one blessing from such a savage blowout as Europe saw is that people will rethink some of their policies and hopefully replace some of the worst policies overall And they've had the advantage of the brilliance of Mario Draghi, Super Mario, who is a superb diplomat and needed to be, and also one of the smartest central bankers in the world. And he's still in charge, and while he's there, I would say that Europe is in good hands, at least as far as the European Central Bank is concerned. So that's an interesting area, and maybe it's only a medium-term play to the upside, but I would continue to favor it, continue to back it. The valuations are still really quite attractive, and people are rediscovering Europe. I'll put it that way. I would be careful where markets have done too well. Sounds like a backhander for the success that we've seen in places like Denmark, but that's one of the more pricey markets. But most of Europe is cheaper, and certainly relative to the United States. Now, Japan, which I liked all last year, and I'm probably going to like it all this year. I think the story is so far on track to work out. Inevitably, there are risks. I have concerns about Japan's energy situation. They're having to pay high prices since the understandable canceling of the nuclear power stations. So they need some fracking in the regional areas. I'm not sure why they're not doing any fracking in Japan, incidentally. I'd be surprised if they didn't have some sites of potential there, but that's a guess on my part. But most countries do, and certainly regionally, there will be plenty of sources of energy there. And what happened last year is that portfolios went from a position of being having almost no investments in Japan, and I'm talking about international portfolios, to a situation where investors are rediscovering this market, moving back in. And Japan's interesting because I think that this reflationary effort may well revive the economy. These are a talented, inventive people, don't forget. And they are strong on the technology side as well. And if confidence returns there generally, and the economy proves more successful and breaks out of this long disinflationary, deflationary slump, then Japan will be formidable. The biggest concern, I feel, other than the energy prices, but that's hopefully a no more than a medium-term problem, would be political tensions in the regions, in the Asian region. You have very high populations. You have a lot of historic enmities. I hope these countries, mainly China, I hope they're sensible, control their military. The last thing we need is some sort of potentially nuclear confrontation between Japan, China, with the USA backing Japan. That should keep China, I think, under wraps in terms of military adventurism for at least the lengthy medium term. But it's common sense. The last thing that region needs is a shooting war. So hopefully this is just a little bit of macho posturing, but that also includes risks and can worry investors. China, I've already covered. I'd give it the benefit of the doubt over the medium term. Certainly, we know that it can be a formidable player in the global economy. Lots of problems. We know all about that. And they're trying to sort them out. Hopefully they succeed, because I think a peaceful and prosperous China would be not only good for the Asian region, but also good for the global economy. I'd still be a little wary of the ASEAN indices. They will, I think, underperform for a while longer. It's just that they did so well from the fourth quarter of 2008 right on into May of last year, way overextended. And then there are some political issues, as we see in Thailand, that creates uncertainty. And I think it's an interesting area always. But it's getting a well-deserved lengthy medium-term retreat, and that will set it up for another run, if not this year, a year or two down the road here overall. And what about these long-dated government bonds? Well, it's a question of how quickly the yields move somewhat higher in here as far as the U.S. Bond market is concerned, and that's the one that will have the biggest overall influence. The Fed will try to prevent those yields from moving up while growth is slow, and they will certainly have some success in actually doing that. And then the rather sporadic nature of the recovery, which remember, it hasn't actually completed the fifth year following the huge credit crisis recession, and Rogoff and Reinhardt and other academic historian economists have said, you know, it takes at least 5 to 10 years for these economies to return to what we would regard as a more normal overall growth pattern. So that would suggest that we would probably get a more gradual rise in bond yields, erratic, and that erratic nature has resulted in this latest pullback from 3%. But I do expect as the year progresses, I think the U.S. economy will be stronger, and I think those bond yields will push higher. I think more people will be coming out of bonds and looking at the stock market, even though the stock market will be, in my opinion, more choppy. Certainly, it's been anything but choppy here recently. And the question is, how much do those bond yields actually move up in the USA? And my feeling is that I don't think there's any need to be alarmist. I don't think we have much of an inflation problem, at least in terms of the data that governments actually produce. The fact that we have a global economy that helps to keep wages under control, an even bigger factor keeping wages under control is the accelerated rate of technological innovation, machines replacing people. So I don't think we'll see anything like the wage pressures that we saw back in the 1970s and 1980s until Paul Volcker reduced that somewhat. And that would suggest that on the statistics that we see, actually, that we get a more moderate rate of inflation helped by, as I say, the open global economy. And or at least it's more open than any other time in history. And that would, in my opinion, suggest that we don't get a dramatic run-up in bond yields. At least I can't see that on the immediate or intermediate horizon. But again, you know, we ended a secular bull market of 32 years duration, I believe. In terms of falling yields in that sector. So we get a bit of a secular uptrend, but I feel quite strongly that it will be a much, much more moderate secular uptrend than the decline that we saw in yields from those very, very high levels. If we go back to the around the late 70s and early 1980s, when Paul Volcker was brought in to wring out the inflationary pressures. And elsewhere, you take Europe, for instance, the concern is disinflation and deflation. So I think those European bond yields are going to stay really quite low, not least as the ECB, Mario Draghi, is giving the banks as much money, unlimited funds, for all intents and purposes. And they've been using that mostly to go in and buy their own government debt and keep those yields down. That's a bit of a virtuous circle here for the medium term. People talk about debt problems in the world, and there are plenty of those. There's one real solution, and that is grow your economies, and don't do stupid things in terms of the in entitlements. Now, what else to mention? This commodity cycle here overall. I did say earlier on in this audio that I felt that we could see a situation where we got a resumption of what I have referred to in previous decades as the commodity super cycle. I mean, that's obviously been interrupted in a very big way for over 2 years. But again, I will repeat that point about we also saw that in the 1970s, where the commodity indices gave up half their gains and then went on to new highs. I don't think we'll get explosive upside moves, but you know, precious metals, I think they're still relatively cheap in here. The industrial metals are certainly relatively cheap and building base formations here overall. Crude oil is the key one. You know my view on this. If we get spikes to the upside on crude oil, then everything's on hold. All bets are off in terms of stock markets to the upside and global GDP growth. And there's a consistent long-term historic record of spikes in the price of crude oil spiking global GDP growth. I think that that's still a possibility, but a gradually diminishing one. I'd feel more comfortable about the diminishing characteristic if we had more fracking taking place around the globe, but I suspect that will occur over time. So an interesting world here overall. As far as the agricultural commodities are concerned, that's more of a punt on the weather than anything else. Demand is growing up. Demand is growing. So we need to make sure, countries need to make sure that they that their agricultural sectors are productive. There's the big element of luck involved in the weather, of course, in all that, and but also that technology is helping enormously in the production of these agricultural commodities as well. And I think that's pretty much a wrap in here. I don't want to go on too long. I will just say all the very best to all of you, and have a fantastic weekend.